Rock out of Stone Cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellscape submission. Oh, my God. What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, the Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
Hey, guys, what's going on? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE Podcast on this September 4th. On a Saturday, once again, as it seems like I'm back on Saturdays. And this is actually kind of a cool episode because I haven't spoken to you guys in over 2 weeks. I know my episode actually dropped the last week, but that would have been recorded the week prior and it didn't drop because with SummerSlam around the corner, there was just like a tidal wave of content. And in the end, it just made more sense to skip that week and bring it for next week. And now I'm back and I'm really happy. And again, on a Saturday, but that's kind of becoming the norm, Friday, Saturday. But the good thing is that I'm here. And today we are here to talk about the rivalry between the Brothers of Destruction and the Two Man Power Trip in 2001. A rivalry that did not last a whole lot long, but when you look at it, it was pretty significant in a lot of ways beyond just the name value, right? Because when you look at the names themselves, it tells you all that you need to know about how significant and impactful this rivalry was. But I really started thinking about this after Brock Lesnar returned, and Matt had brought it up several times. Other people had touched on it about, I believe, even Jim Cornette, about what if Brock and Roman Reigns joined forces to form a modern day version of the two-man power trip. And I guess to go back and really start this rivalry, it's important to really outline as to where all four of these superstars were. So let's stop at the top of the mountain here, right? With Stone Cold Steve Austin. He had returned in October of 2000 after taking a year off due to his neck injury. And he dove headfirst into a rivalry with Triple H that lasted all the way until No Way Out 2001 in the Three Stages of Hell match. And he had just won the Royal Rumble. He became the number one contender for the WWF Championship to headline WrestleMania 17. And as we know, after his rivalry completed with Triple H, he went on to face The Rock at the grandest stage in them all, which is regarded as the best WrestleMania of all time and probably the best main event to a WrestleMania of all time between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship. And as we know, that rivalry, or that match rather, concluded with the most infamous heel turn in the history of professional wrestling. And I would say even more so than Hulk Hogan's heel turn with the NWO and WCW. Because that one worked as opposed to Stone Cold Steve Austin, where I don't believe it did. And I don't think many believe it did, including Stone Cold Steve Austin himself. So Vince McMahon helps him win the WWF Championship. And the following night on Raw, he has a rematch against The Rock, this time inside a steel cage. And Vince McMahon gets involved again. It's a double team. And just when you think that a shining light is coming to the ring to help The Rock, we see the formation of one of the most deadly duos in the history of the WWF.
Chairman of the board, and the WWF, Mr. McMahon. Here comes the game. It was our Raider. He's falling off. And he's got the sledgehammer. Oh, my God. Mr. McMahon's trying to restrain his son-in-law. It was our Raider. tell me that these three, Austin, Triple H, and McMahon, are on the same page? Please don't tell me that. Oh, the love of God, the Rock, the Fistless, being assaulted by three men and a damn sledgehammer. The Rock is being decimated, physically destroyed.
The end of the people's dream. We are witnessing the destruction of the Rock.
A stern epidemic at this point. The Rock is totally defenseless. And now Triple H and Austin talk their trash to the fallen Rock. This match has disintegrated all the way to the depths of hell. Thanks to Mr. McMahon, Austin, and the gang.
So, as JR said, that all three of these guys were on one sadistic page, and I remember watching this, and obviously I'm a Rock fan, so in the moment, I'm losing my mind, I'm freaking out, probably crying a bit, no, I'm kidding, but I was very upset nonetheless, and, you know, I remember thinking back when Triple H's music hit, and I was just like, okay, I know he hates Steve Austin, and I know that they really have no love lost, but my God, he's going to come help The Rock? Like, The Rock and Triple H for the entirety of the year 2000 were at each other's throats. And he came in, obviously doubles down as a heel. That's another thing. Triple H was a full-blown heel at this time, and had been the biggest heel in the company up until Steve Austin had turned heel one night before. So I really wasn't shocked to see that Triple H wasn't the knight in shining armor coming out to the ring to, you know, aid The Rock. And, you know, this put The Rock off of television for 4 months in storyline. It was because Vince McMahon suspended him. In real life, it was to go film The Scorpion King. But this really left Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H at the top of the mountain in the WWE, running roughshod on the entire company. And who the hell was going to stop them, right? And, you know, The Rock was gone, the biggest babyface in the company. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the other biggest babyface in the company, had just turned heel and aligned himself with the biggest heel in the company. And to boot, they have Vince McMahon, the evil boss of this empire, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes. So they really were an unstoppable force. And this brings us to the following Raw, when Triple H has a match against Jeff Hardy for the Intercontinental Championship. And a match that he successfully wins and captures the Intercontinental title. A title that he had not held for, I want to say, 2 years or so, because from 99 to this time, he was always in the hunt for the WWF Championship. But Triple H wins that title, and now you have the two-man power trip holding the two most prestigious championships in the WWF at the time. But during this match, Stone Cold Steve Austin had attacked Matt Hardy backstage, and then you had Triple H and Stone Cold start beating the hell out of Jeff Hardy post-match. And this is when Matt Hardy comes to make the save down to the ring. And I'm going to preface this by saying that this is my favorite wrestling moment in the history of me watching this product, because it just checked all the boxes. Getting as much heel heat as possible to an absolute boiling point, a surprise, and a badass moment to have a show, specifically in this case, Monday Night Raw, go off the air. So before I give it away too much, I'll play it, and then we'll talk about it completely because I have goosebumps in this very moment. So you have Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin running roughshod and just destroying the Hardy Boys, and eventually set their sights on Lita, until finally, someone had enough.
That's it. Stop it. Can we get some?
is not right. Fair game. This is fair game, my ass. These are two grown men. Stop in this.
Man, that is just such a badass moment. I absolutely love it. So, you know, they're beating the hell out of the Hardy Boys. Then they throw Lita into the ring with the help of Stephanie McMahon. They're seemingly now going to set their sights on her. And then the lights go out. The explosion hits. Limp Bizkit's playing. The crowd's going nuts. And The Undertaker and Kane just slowly walk down to the ring. And as they get in, the two-man power trip retreats. And this is like when you knew that something big was on the horizon here. And this was kind of low-hanging fruit, right? Because for one, who the hell else did you have? You know, The Rock was gone. Austin was no longer a babyface. Who else would possibly be able to step up to Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H? And then you have these two guys who were quickly becoming, especially in the absence of The Rock, the two biggest baby faces on the roster. And just not 2 weeks prior, or I guess at this point it was just a week prior, Triple H and The Undertaker had had their first ever match at WrestleMania, WrestleMania 17, which was kind of like the sub-main event to Rock and Austin. So it was low-hanging fruit in that regard as well, that you had, you know, a rivalry that was already very well established between The Undertaker and Triple H. And then you have Kane, who, in my opinion, this was kind of like the best version of Kane. He was just a badass babyface alongside The Undertaker. I do think he could have maybe gotten a main event run on his own, but that's neither here nor there, but this was just a subjective opinion. I know everyone would probably say, you know, when he first unmasked or something, or when he first showed up. But this, to me, was my favorite version of Kane as a babyface alongside The Undertaker. And in a lot of ways, this is when WWE really started pushing him and started to really cement him as a main event level talent. And I know you could say, well, they did that right out of the gate. He showed up and challenged The Undertaker. He fought against him at WrestleMania 14. He even had a rivalry with Stone Cold Steve Austin when the WWF Championship for a day. But that was all good. But I felt as though that was them just really trying to push the character because of the look and everything. As opposed to now, I felt like Kane had organically started to get over with the crowd, and, you know, it wasn't the WWE universe back then. And I think what was indicative of that was the Royal Rumble that had just passed, when he had at that time broke the record with 11 eliminations that was later on broken by Roman Reigns. So it made sense based on where both The Undertaker and Kane were at to be the two guys to finally step up to the two-man power trip. And I felt as though that it was also a very good thing for The Undertaker, because since he had returned in May of 2000, so just about a year as the American Badass, he never had really gotten back into the main event scene. and he had not held the title since. You know, he had a brief program with Kurt Angle feuding over the WWF Championship. He was involved in the Armageddon six-man Hell in a Cell match, a match that Angle won as well when Taker chokeslammed or choke-pushed, rather, Rikishi off the top of the cell into the pickup truck. But I also really felt as though it was important for The Undertaker to become reestablished as a main event guy. Because, you know, you had The Rock versus Triple H. Then Kurt Angle won the WWF Championship at, I believe it was No Mercy in October of 2000. Stone Cold Steve Austin returned. So The Undertaker, before you knew it, really got pushed down the card. And then they elevated him back up the card for WrestleMania 17 for his match against Triple H. So it was important to keep establishing or reestablishing The Undertaker as a main event level talent. And as I previously said, when you had nobody seemingly to stand up to the two-man power trip, this really was low-hanging fruit for Vince McMahon to go with. I don't even know if there was a creative team back then. I guess it was Jim Cornette and Vince Russo. No, Vince Russo had already left. But nevertheless, whoever was booking at that time, this was low-hanging fruit. And to be honest, in retrospect, there was really no other option. So the following SmackDown, because as we know, no brand split at the time, both all talents were on both shows, we got to hear from The Undertaker and Kane why exactly they chose to put a stop to the two-man power trip.
Throughout all the years, Kane and I
a decade of destruction with The Undertaker here.
Kane and I, really, we've never been known for our sense of humor. It hasn't exactly been a decade of laughs. It's been a decade of destruction. But I do have to admit, Triple H, a couple of weeks ago, he said, said something, and I'll be damned if I didn't think it was the funniest thing I ever heard. So, Mr. TV producer man, if you'll roll that footage, I want everybody to take a look at it. Because what you see standing in this ring before you right now is the two most dominant men in the World Wrestling Federation today, in the past, in the future. Kane, you want to see that one more time? I thought so. Let's roll that one more time. Because what you see standing in this ring before you right now is the two most dominant men in the World Wrestling Federation today, in the past, in the future. Now, I told you that was funny. Now, speaking for the two most dominating forces of destruction, I don't want Triple H and Austin to feel like we're offended. We find it pretty damn funny.
So that's pretty much what it boils down to, right? As to why The Undertaker and Kane inserted themselves into the business of the two-man power trip. And the SmackDown prior, because I had actually made a mistake in the timeline here. This was the Raw right after that. A week later, still on Raw, that the Brothers of Destruction had initially intervened with the Brothers of Destruction. And the SmackDown in between, Kane and The Undertaker had defeated Edge and Christian for the World Tag Team Championships. And following this, the Edge and Christian come out, attack Kane and The Undertaker, but it turns out just to be a distraction for the two-man power trip to get involved. The Hardys get involved. There ends up being an eight-man tag team match between the Brothers of Destruction and the Hardys against Edge and Christian, Austin, and Triple H. And then it eventually breaks down into Kane and Undertaker versus Austin and Triple H. But at this point, now you have all the major championships involved in this program. You have Kane and The Undertaker holding the tag titles. You have Triple H holding the Intercontinental title. And Stone Cold Steve Austin as the WWF champion. And it ultimately leads to a winner-take-all match at Backlash between the Brothers of Destruction and the two-man power trip. And along the way, you had a lot of work to do, I think, to still really establish Stone Cold Steve Austin as a heel. And obviously aligning himself with Triple H, the biggest heel in the company, along with Vince McMahon. You're off to a good start, but I truly do think that this was an uphill battle from the onset here. And it did help that you're bringing in the Brothers of Destruction to pit him against, because they were fairly universally beloved. I think just about everyone loved Kane and The Undertaker. But you were still having to try and fight tooth and nail to push this narrative that Stone Cold Steve Austin was a full-blown level heel. And along the way, they had a lot of work to do in just about 2 or 3 weeks here to establish Stone Cold Steve Austin as that type of heel. And what they end up doing is they really start targeting the arm of Kane. They break his arm. And it's the kind of underhanded tactic that you would see out of a heel, something unbecoming of the Stone Cold Steve Austin we had come to love over the preceding 4 or 5 years, right? So you get to Backlash 2001, winner-take-all match. And at this point, you know, I think almost everyone was fully behind Kane and The Undertaker. But as I previously just said, The Undertaker, or Kane rather, is down to one functioning arm. That's really the issue here for Kane. And as the match unfolds, and that was another thing, is that I can't remember exactly how it would have worked. Like, if The Undertaker and Kane were to win, like, let's say Kane pins Steve Austin, would he become the WWF champion and Taker becomes the Intercontinental champion and vice versa? Because obviously, if Austin and Triple H win, it's pretty straightforward that they just completely just take the two tag team titles and along the way you go. But that was the only thing that was a bit confusing for me, was how exactly the stipulation worked. But this was arguably one of the biggest main events that WWE had put on in recent time, because you had all your major championships invested into one match, all your major stars invested into one match, a massive, massive main event that you're putting all your chips into the table. You're putting all your eggs in one basket. So when the match is finally playing out, we got to see which team would walk away with all the gold.
Winning the WWF title with one arm. But Kane has no way.
to the Gang.
Another tag. Austin and the Gang make the exchange. The King with the insecure. The Triple H run right into the official. King's got to make a tag here. Raphael Hendrick will hit right in the face. Kane is close to his corner. Kane is there. Kane made the tag. I'm not so sure the referee saw it, but Kane did make the tag. And the Undertaker opening up on Austin, opening up on the Game. Triple H's a legal man here. And the Undertaker manhandling, single-handedly, beating down the Intercontinental Champion. And Austin knocked in the corner. Huge body shots on the WWF champion. Undertaker, my God, he's on fire, Paul. He's taking it.
So I'm going to stop it right there quickly, because at this point you have Undertaker get the hot tag and he's just going, you know, ape, you know what, all over Austin and Triple H. And now you're really starting to see like a typical tag team match unfold. And I don't know if you caught that, but Earl Hebner shoving Stephanie McMahon off the apron. That's just, you know, it's too bad that WWE doesn't involve the referees as much back in the day as they did back in the day, rather. Because it was just great. I found it made it realistic to see WWE officials have like a personal like investment in the match, right? I know that now it's more about concentrating on the stars, but to me, like when you watch sports, you see referees jawing with guys and you hear their names and like they become part of the storylines kind of, but maybe that's just me being nostalgic or whatever. But let's get back to the conclusion of this match as all hell really starts to break loose.
Kane barely able to stand. Triple H took the last ride. He's barely able to stand. The Triple H is going to win. And he got knocked back in his face. My God, after all this, are you going to tell me that Kane is going to beat the Game for the Intercontinental title here? Princesses in the ring. Oh, boy! For the love of God, Kane kicks Stephanie right in the face. And there's Mr. McMahon with a sledgehammer. Wait a minute. Oh, on the elbow. The sledgehammer. Mr. McMahon was going for the ride, but the Game's got the sledgehammer. And right in the head. Oh, my God. McMahon. Get the referee out! The sledgehammer hit Kane in the head! No! No, God! No, damn it! No!
He takes his chicken!
And lo and behold, Vince McMahon gets involved, passes the sledgehammer to Triple H, who hits Kane in the bad elbow and then subsequently in the head and gets the 1-2-3. And, you know, I gotta say something. Stephanie McMahon took so many bumps back in this era of wrestling. I really got hit by hat to her. Like, she runs in, and it's such a funny visual, right? Like, Kane's getting Triple H set for the choke slam, and Stephanie McMahon runs at him, and then he just, like, lifts his foot, and boom, she just runs into the sole of his foot. And in my head, I'm just like, even if he didn't see you, like, what are you going to accomplish here, right? But yeah, Stephanie McMahon, I got to tip my hat to her. I'm not the biggest fan of her on-screen character nowadays, but back then, she took so many bumps. It was crazy. Like, she got pushed off the ring apron, then she gets big booted by Kane. And then, you know, how many times did she get rock bottomed or stunnered and whatnot? But, yeah, then Vince McMahon runs in. And even Vince McMahon at this time, you know, when he used to run, you know, around the ring, because at the end, like, he sprints around the ring, grabs the ref who had been knocked down, obviously, and slides him back into the ring for the 1-2-3. Like, Vince McMahon added to this. And, You know, it wasn't the end of this rivalry, as the following night, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H really decimated the Brothers of Destruction, just continued to brutalize the arm of Kane, putting it like on the steel steps, smashing it, destroyed the Undertaker. And you really legitimize these two guys as the two badasses and the top dogs in the WWF. Unfortunately, you know, not even a month later, Triple H tore his quad and it really pulled the rug out from under them. And that was the end of the two-man power trip and something we were never to see again. And they actually dropped the tag team titles to Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, another very underrated tag team. I think that, you know, this rivalry as a whole is something that we have never seen since. And I guess we had seen it in a babyface version with the Mega Powers, Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. But two heels, the two biggest stars in the company, arguably running roughshod, you know, that was something we were unaccustomed to. And obviously with The Rock out of the picture, there was no main event elite level babyface to, you know, go toe-to-toe with them. But they did a damn good job building up Undertaker and Kane to do that. And I think it legitimized Undertaker and Kane as main event level talents. And I know you can make the case that Taker was already at that level, but he hadn't been for almost 2 years. Like, not since he had returned as the American Badass. I don't think you could really say he was a main event level guy. He was with the Ministry of Darkness and the Dead Man gimmick before he got injured and took a year off. But since returning to as the American Badass, he was kind of like a tweener between the upper mid card and the main event level scene. And in regards to Kane, yeah, that initial push had him in the main event, and he did have a cup of coffee as the WWF champion in his rivalry against Stone Cold, and I believe it was 1998. But that was more just them pushing the character. This time around, I really felt it was the guy getting over his own ability and, you know, them legitimizing him with the Royal Rumble performance, eliminating 11 guys, being the runner-up to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I just think that this rivalry legitimized the two guys as the main event level heels in the company and the other two as two legitimate contenders. Maybe not so much Kane, but definitely The Undertaker in able to step up to the plate. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we will see Lesnar and Roman do something similar. But then you have to ask yourself, who would be the two guys to step up? You know, who in the hell would be able to step up to to Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns? And maybe my little my misstep there kind of gave away one of the guys who I think that would be maybe in line to do that, in Bobby Lashley, because I think the only two guys that you could realistically and reasonably expect to fulfill said shoes would be Lashley and probably Drew McIntyre. So I don't know, guys, would you be in favor of seeing a babyface tandem of Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre go up against Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar? Who knows? I ultimately don't think it will happen. I think that we will get Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns part 72. But you never know. We can only hope, right? Maybe they go down both roads. Maybe they start as foes and then they end up as guys against each other. But anyway, guys, that's pretty much all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed the Brothers of Destruction versus the two-man power trip. My God, easy enough for me to say, eh? But as always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can get Matt on Twitter at wrestling_audio. And you can email him at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, guys, stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you next week.